Episode number 24 of the MVP is brought to you by our buddies at GoDaddy.com and all the great GoDaddy discount codes you can get at ScottSigler.com/GoDaddy. You know, they give us new codes every month. The code that's super hot right now, there's two of them, Scott295, which gets you a brand new domain for $2.95, or HostDeal5, HostDeal5, which gets you hosting for $1 a month for the first year. Those codes and many more over at ScottSigler.com/GoDaddy. If you have a website, if you have an e-business or want a web-based business, you want email hosting, blog hosting, turnkey e-commerce solution, SSL, GoDaddy is the place to go. We've been using them for 7 years now here at Dark Overlord Media, and they always answer the phone. The best thing I love about GoDaddy, you call them for customer support help, and you get someone who speaks your language on the phone right away, and they fix the problem. They know what the hell they're talking about. That's the biggest factor that keeps us a customer for GoDaddy. That's why we feel good recommending them. So if you need anything internet-related, go to ScottSigler.com/GoDaddy. Check out the codes that are available there for the discounts. And now on with our story. Welcome to The MVP, book four in the Galactic Football League series, written and performed by author Scott Sigler. The MVP is suitable for ages 12 and up and contains graphic on-field violence. This novel, along with book one, The Rookie, book two, The Starter, and book three, The All-Pro, is available as a full-length, unabridged digital audiobook download as an ebook for Kindle, Nook, iPad, iPhone, Android, or any EPUB-compatible device, and in paperback. The MVP is also available as a signed, numbered, limited-run collector's edition hardcover while supplies last. To order any version, go to scottsigler.com/store. Hello, junkies, and welcome to the 8th anniversary of the Scott Sigler Audiobooks podcast. Yes, the Great Eight. We started this stuff way back on March 25th, 2005. Since then, we have put out 2 trade paperbacks, 8 hardcovers, trade paperbacks for all of those hardcovers, making it 10 trade paperbacks. It's amazing. And a lot of audiobooks and ebooks and all kinds of good stuff and t-shirts and hats. And I have seen literally thousands of you out on the road. And it has been awesome. And I'm glad that you were here either at the beginning or whenever you joined us. I am thrilled that you are a part of the giant cult of ego that is me. The Pandemic third draft is finished. That is off to the shiv at Crown Publishing. Probably need to take one more spin on it, but hopefully we have got the story where it needs to be in order to get our October 1st, 2013 release date. If you want to get your pre-order in for Pandemic, the final book in the Infected Trilogy, just go to scottsigler.com/pandemic. I've got links there for Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, and also to get autographed copies from Borderlands Books in San Francisco. And we did speak too soon on the Sigler Ascension Day deal that we are offering. I talked about it in last week's podcast. Our intention was to offer The Rookie Kindle ebook for 41 cents, The Rookie paperback for 41 cents plus shipping from our site at scottsigler.com/store, and The Starter and Rookie paperbacks together plus shipping for $4.10. We realized now that we have contracts with publishers, the contract said we're only allowed to sell those paperbacks for the paperback cover price. So we're checking to see if we can get that done. We're going to have some kind of Sigler Ascension Day offer for you. Hopefully we'll be able to honor those very same prices. Probably won't be happening on April 1st. But sign up over at scottsigler.com with a profile. You'll get our newsletter, which comes out twice a month, most of the time. And we'll let you know what's going on with that. We'll also promote it on this podcast and at the site. We're going to do something cool for Sigler Ascension Day. It just might not fall on Sigler Ascension Day. After this episode, I will have 18 new junkie shoutouts for people who signed up with a profile over at scottsigler.com. That's coming up at the end of the episode. But right now, here we go with the MVP episode number 24. Word of warning, you may have heard some of this already depending on when you downloaded episode 23. Last week, I had a total screw-up, put the wrong audiobook chapter into the podcast. It's corrected now, so if this sounds logical to you, that means you downloaded episode 23 after the fix. If it sounds crazy, just go back and re-download episode number 23 of the MVP podcast. then listen to episode number 24 of the MVP podcast. For episode 25 of the MVP podcast, everything will be fine and dandy, and then we will hurtle along to the finish, which comes in the MVP episode number 38. That's my 5 minutes of fury. Now let's get into it. The MVP episode number 24. Players shuffled slowly into Infinity Stadium's visitors' locker room. The place felt like a funeral. Quentin leaned against a wall, watching his teammates, analyzing who was okay with the loss, who was down, who was angry, and who was devastated. Things had to change and change fast, or Werberg's prophecy would come true. The slam of a body against a locker drew Quentin's attention. Players backed away from a fight between a Sklorno and a Prowat. Vacaville and Bumberpuff, a tangle of tentacles and whipping bodies. Quentin ran to them. Vacaville rolled on top of Bumberpuff and wrapped her raspers around the Prowat's right arm. She yanked them away, sending bits of metal flying.
"Damn your soul, demon, you lost us the game!"
Quentin dove in, knocking Vacaville off of the Prowat. Bumberpuff should have gotten up and moved away, but instead, he stood and dove on top of Quentin and Vacaville, whipping his flexible arm down on Vacaville's head.
"I played hard!"
Bumberpuff screamed.
"You didn't play at all, you stupid cricket scrub!"
Suddenly, more Sklorno rushed in, hitting and tackling and digging with raspers. The other Prowat players slammed into the pile. Both sides screamed racial epithets. Quentin found himself at the bottom of a miniature race war.
"Guys, knock it off!"
Quentin almost stood, but was knocked to his back again when Tommy Boy tackled Sheboygan. Then another weight fell on top of him. Chodo the Bright, diving into the pile to cover Quentin's body with his own. A heavy impact suddenly rolled the entire pile of some 10 players to the left. Bodies spilled across the floor. Everyone looked up to see the shirtless Tweety brothers, standing there with their fists clenched and their muscles rippling. John snarled. His face tattoo played an angry wash of bright colors.
"That's enough! The next one of you that throws a punch is gonna get squashed!"
"Mega squashed," said Jew, and thumped a fist against his chest.
"Super mega squashed," John said.
Chodo pulled Quentin to his feet. Quentin's eyes watered and he felt blood on his face. Fingertips sought the center of pain. His nose was broken, and badly. The Sklorno stood and gathered on one side of Quentin, the Prowat on the other. Both sides stared at each other, eye stalks vibrating and lenses whirring. They wore the same team colors but couldn't possibly look more separate. For a moment, it seemed like the fight might erupt all over again. Then John stomped toward the Sklorno and Jew stomped toward the Prowat. The Sklorno scurried to their locker room. The Prowat didn't have a species-specific place, so they moved to the back of the central locker room and stayed there. Coach Hokor came running in.
"Is there grab-assing going on? I told you, players, there is no grab-assing! Who is at fault here?"
Jew thumped his chest.
"It's fine, coach. We got it under control."
"Mega control!" John said.
Hokor's black swirling eyes stared at the brothers Tweety, then at the Prowat. Finally, he looked at his bleeding quarterback, and the one big eye narrowed to a hateful slit.
"I want to know who started this,"
the coach said.
"I want to know now."
John shrugged.
"Started what?"
Jew's face furrowed with fake confusion.
"I don't know what you're talking about, coach."
Hokor stared at the Tweety brothers. Then he turned to Quentin.
"Barnes, we have to end this grab-assing. Who started it?"
Quentin looked at the Tweeties. Did they have something in mind?
"It's under control, coach," Quentin said. "The players will handle it."
Hokor stomped a little foot.
"Well, no more grab-assing, understand? I'm already trying to prepare for Shora."
Quentin looked for and found Yasud. Quentin tilted his head toward the Prowat.
"Get them out of here, will you? Take them to our locker room."
Yasud walked to the Prowat, holding both hands wide as if he was corralling wayward sheep.
"This way, you crazy kids. Let's go cool off."
He gently herded them into the human locker room. With the combatants gone, Quentin, John, and Jew moved close together so they could speak quietly.
"This is bad," Quentin said. "This racism. We have to make them work together. We're going to go back down to Tier 2. What can we do?"
"Beat the living crap out of them," Jew said. A good old-fashioned whooping will do the trick. Hey, John, do Broad have asses? I'm not sure how to kick their asses if they don't have asses.
John sighed and shook his head.
My dearest brother, always with the corporal colonel punishment. When it comes to discipline, we know who to ask.
Mother knows best scrolled across John's head. Jew smiled and nodded.
Good idea. Ma will take care of this.
Ma, Tweety? Were the two brothers joking?
Guys, we're talking centuries of hate here. I don't think Ma can kiss it and make it all better.
Ma will know what to do, John said.
He looked at his brother.
Somehow she made the two of us get along.
Jew smiled one of his more evil smiles.
And compared to how my brother and I treated each other, centuries of hate ain't nothing. Q, you better see Doc Pata about that nose. It's messed up.
Mega messed up, John said. But you were kind of ugly to begin with.
The Tweety brothers headed for the human locker room.
Elder Barnes?
Quentin jumped at the unexpected voice behind him. He turned to see Masal the Efficient standing there.
Masal, how do you do that?
Do what, Elder Barnes?
Sneak up on me like that.
I assure you, Elder Barnes, I would never intentionally startle you,
Masal said.
Miss Yolanda Davenport asked me to tell you that she requests an exclusive interview right here on Buddha City Station.
Janine, Yolanda might have information on my sister. Did Yolanda say what it was about?
I'm afraid she said it is about the franchise's dismal record,
Masal said.
And also she is researching an ancient offense for a historical article. Elder Barnes, have you ever heard of the Mooey Bridge offense?
Mooey Bridge. Fred's code word. Yolanda did have information about Janine.
I've heard of it, Quentin said. It's really obscure. Book the interview, Masal.
Masal bowed slightly.
Yes, Elder Barnes. Right away.
Quentin paced in his guest suite in the Buddha City Station Hilton, waiting for Yolanda Davenport. She had booked the room so they'd have privacy, away from the other reporters and away from Quentin's teammates. He hoped she hurried up, because this place gave him the creeps. The guest suite was certainly beautiful. Expensive art flashed in holoframes. Statues stood in each corner. The smart paper looked brand new, and each piece of furniture was worth more than Quentin had made in an entire year of mining. Even with the money he'd earned playing for the Raiders, he wouldn't have been able to afford staying here. All of this for rich guests while citizens starved? The art alone would have bought many months of food for thousands of people. He was antsy. Did Yolanda have info on his sister, or was this just another football-related story? Well, if it was the latter, it couldn't hurt to give the interview. Yolanda had done him wrong, true, but she'd made up for it and put herself at great risk to do so. She'd even been roughed up a little by Anna Valani's goons, and that Quentin had to respect. Yolanda was willing to put herself at risk and play through the pain to get a job done, just like he was.
Elder Barnes, Miss Davenport has arrived.
He walked to the door. It hissed open. Two armored greens were waiting outside. Behind them, a white-uniformed, white-furred Quith worker standing next to a purple-skinned, white-haired Yolanda Davenport. Both cops had a hand on the hilt of their holstered nail guns. The one on the right looked normal, but the one on the left was a woman, a bit of a rarity in the greens. Quentin smiled at her.
Aren't you a little small to be a green?
He couldn't see her expression behind the face shield. The name on her chest plate read, R. McGillicuddy. The man's chest plate read, X. Zhang.
Funny, Zhang said. You all done being a comedian?
High One guides us to our true calling, Quentin said. I just gotta be me.
Zhang's fingers tightened on the nail gun's handle, reminding Quentin that on Buddha City Station, accidents happen, even to star quarterbacks.
Sorry, Quentin said. Please, come on in.
Zhang stepped in, followed by Yolanda, the worker, then the other cop. The door shut. The five sentients stood in the well-decorated living room. Quentin waited for someone to talk. Yolanda looked at the worker and nodded. The worker pulled small devices from his pockets and set them on a coffee table, on the backs of chairs, all over the place. He fiddled with these devices for a moment, then turned to Yolanda.
The room is clear,
he said.
I found two recording devices, but now they're both jammed. We're free to talk.
Yolanda let out a big breath.
Finally, she said. Quentin, your people are so damn paranoid about heretics spreading a message of this and a message of that.
He nodded.
I'm familiar with the concept.
She gestured to the worker.
Meet Y-Kor the Aware. He works for Commissioner Frost and also helps me with stories from time to time.
The worker offered a Petipalp hand. Quentin reached down and shook it.
Exceptional game this afternoon, Mr. Barnes,
Y-Kor said.
The second best completion percentage of your career, including your time with the Raiders.
Was that true? Quentin had no idea.
If you say so, nice to meet you.
Yolanda then gestured to Zhang.
And I believe you already know this guy.
The cop pulled off his helmet.
High one, Quentin said.
Fred? Frederico smiled.
I wouldn't call it my best disguise ever, Q. Face shields are almost like cheating.
How did you get here?
Your yacht, Fred said. We flew it to Stewart, then we took a commercial flight to the station.
We?
Fred smiled and looked at McGillicuddy. She raised her face shield. Quentin found himself looking at the woman of his childhood memories.
Janine?
He could barely believe it. She took off the helmet. Brown hair spilled down around caramel skin. She smiled at him.
Hello, brother.
He didn't know what to say. Then it hit him. What better place for Fred to set up a meeting? She could effortlessly blend in on the station, on McCovey, or on any of the Purist Nation worlds. How Fred got his hands on a pair of Greens uniforms was another thing entirely, but everything had a price, and Fred had unlimited access to Quentin's massive bank account. Quentin stayed very still, as if a sudden movement might make his sister run screaming from the suite.
I thought you didn't want to see me.
She nodded.
I didn't. Like Fred told you, I needed some time.
She looked around the room.
Do you think I could speak to my brother in private?
Yolanda walked to the bedroom door.
Y-Kor, come on. Let's go over some notes on that story about Don Pine's return to Jupiter. Fred, can a girl buy you a drink? I brought a bottle of Isis whiskey.
Fred followed Yolanda and Y-Kor to the bedroom.
None for me, thanks, he said. The station might be easy to infiltrate, but it's still a place where one wrong word can get someone looking at your papers. I'll just have water.
They entered the bedroom and shut the door behind them, leaving Quentin alone with the sister he'd never known. She sat on the couch, then gestured that he should do the same. He sat next to her. Was this really Janine, or was someone playing games with his heart again? The thought of that man who had pretended to be his father, the man Greedock had used to trick Quentin. She smiled.
You're wondering if I'm really your sister?
Quentin laughed, the sound carrying embarrassment and relief.
Yeah, a little.
She reached out and took his hand, her caramel-colored skin against his light brown.
I know Greedock lied to you, but I am your sister. I think you know that. I held you when you were a baby. When you were about as big as your head is now, I changed your diapers. I fed you, helped take care of you.
She spoke the truth. He knew her face, a face that was burned into his earliest memories. There could be no mistake. He felt tears welling up in his eyes. After spending his childhood wishing that his family would find him, after scanning the stands at each and every game, hoping to see someone who could connect him to something beyond his lonely existence, after allowing himself to be duped and used, he finally found himself looking at family. He wiped away tears with his free hand.
Fred said you were afraid of me. Are you still?
She nodded.
Yes, I am. My past is... I've had issues with angry men, Quentin, and from what I've seen, you're angrier than most.
So why did you want to see me?
Because of the orbiting death game, she said. Yala the Biter tried to get you to fight, and you walked away.
Quentin felt a surge of anxiety. He'd come so close to hitting Yala, to giving into the anger. If he had, would it have cost him his sister? If she feared who he was, he couldn't pretend that he'd mastered his lifelong temper. He had to tell her the truth.
I only walked away for the team, he said. I wanted to kick the crap out of him.
She patted his hand, held it tight.
You wanted to, but you didn't. That's what matters. I barely know you, little brother, but you made me proud.
The words sent a surge through his chest. She was proud of him? Not for his on-field accomplishments or for being an intergalactic star. She was proud simply because he had controlled his anger. She smiled at him again. He marveled at her blue eyes, the same eyes he saw whenever he looked in the mirror. He wished he had the words to tell her what it all meant to him, but somehow he knew she understood. He touched her brown hair. I remember you being blonde. She laughed, a small thing brought on by a distant memory of her past.
Yeah, dyeing my hair pissed Dad off, so I did it a lot. I had blonde hair, purple hair, green, blue, red, you name it. This is my real color, boring old brown.
She looked off, seemed to be thinking, remembering.
If you're anything like Dad was, walking away from that fight had to be hard.
She stared at him again.
High one, look at you. You could be Dad's twin.
What was he like?
Her smile faded.
You were too young to remember, but, well, when I was a teenager, there were a lot of hard times in our house. He was gone a lot. When he was home, there were problems.
What kind of problems?
She waved a hand.
It doesn't matter now.
She bit at her lower lip, chose her words carefully. Dad did the best he could to provide for us, but he saw horrible things. And he didn't talk about it, but he did horrible things as well. Quentin had just assumed his father worked in the mines like everyone else.
What did he do?
He was a mercenary, she said. He was a teenager himself during the takeover. He fought against the Kredorakians. After that, he hired out to whomever could pay him. He worked all over the galaxy. Some wars were documented, some weren't. He also did some work for the church. I asked him about it a lot. All he would ever say was, "My family has to eat."
The rush of information coursed through Quentin, swirled around in his head, grabbed his heart, and squeezed. His father had been a mercenary? The concept hammered home just how privileged Quentin's life had become, and brought guilt that he still found ways to complain about it.
Is that how Dad died? Fighting a war?
She stared at him for a second, then shook her head.
I never said he died. Dad is still alive.
Quentin opened his mouth to speak, but he had no words. The bedroom door opened. Frederica rushed out, pulling on his helmet, Yolanda and Wycor close behind. Fred grabbed Janine's helmet and tossed it to her.
McGillicuddy, get your gear, he said. We have to move. We've been made.
She stood and put the helmet on. Quentin wasn't about to let her go so soon.
Come on, Fred. Already? What is it? Greedock?
Worse, Fred said. Anna Vellani. Anna Vellani, owner of the OS-1 orbiting death. A stab of fear and anger shot through Quentin.
What the hell does that psycho want?
Fred nodded at Janine.
Vellani wants her. Anna isn't done with you, Q. She knows about your sister. She knows your sister is here. I don't know how Vellani found out, but she did. I have to get Janine out of here, fast.
Janine buckled her helmet strap and flipped down her visor.
I'm ready.
Vellani wasn't even here, and she was taking Quentin's sister away from him. He wanted to wrap his hands around Anna's neck and squeeze.
Why does she want Janine?
Leverage, Fred said as he quickly rearranged Janine's gear.
Vellani can't touch you without risking Greedock's wrath and starting a major gang war, but she can snag your sister. Anna wants payback on you for getting Jew off the hook for Grace McDermott's murder. And if Anna gets your sister, how well do you think you'll play against the orbiting death next year?
His sister hadn't done anything to anybody. Yet here she was, the target of not one, but two crime lords. All because of Quentin.
Janine, I'm sorry, Quentin said. I didn't mean for this to happen.
Janine sneered, a dismissive gesture that Quentin had seen and felt on his own face many times.
Screw Vellani, she said, and screw Greedock. This is their fault, not yours, baby brother.
She stepped forward and wrapped her arms around him. He hugged her back, his emotions bubbling out of control. Fred gently pulled her away.
Come on, McGillicuddy, time to move.
Quentin grabbed the detective's shoulder.
Fred, thank you. Keep her safe. I'll pay you whatever it takes.
Fred smiled a smile that was half reassurance, half cockiness. I'm not doing this just for the money anymore, or for you. I'm doing it for Janine. They'll have to kill me before they get to her. We'll fly to Stuart, grab the Hypatia, and we'll be back in Ionath City in a couple of days. Anna's goons don't have the chops to catch me. He flipped down his visor, once again anonymous behind the black material, then left the suite. Janine followed him out. The door hissed shut, leaving Quentin alone with Yolanda and Wycor. Quentin sat heavily on the couch. Had his efforts to rescue Jude Tweedy put his own sister in danger? Obviously, but what else could he have done? Yolanda pulled a chair in front of him and sat.
Quentin, I'm very sorry that you have to go through all of this.
He looked at her perfect purple face, her white hair and frosted lips. He looked her in the eye.
Thanks, and thank you for helping set this up, Yolanda. I owe you.
She smiled.
Yes, you do. So let's cash in. I know you're upset about your family, but I still have a job to do. Ready for that interview?
Wycor pulled another device out of his pocket. A camera. Quentin sighed, then nodded.
Sure. Ask me anything you want.
GFL Week 6 Roundup, courtesy of Galaxy Sports Network. Almost halfway through the season, and the Criminals are the only remaining undefeated team. Y'all, 5-0, maintained its first place standing in the Planet Division with a 31-24 win over the OS-1 Orbiting Death, who are 3-3. Criminals receiver Concord led the way with 211 receiving yards and 2 touchdowns, both of which came on simple outpasses that the Scolano turned into long touchdown plays of 65 and 57 yards. Running back Jack Townsend added 114 yards on the ground and 2 rushing touchdowns of his own. Y'all has a 1-game lead on division rival Wabash, 4-1. The Wolfpack took sole possession of second with a 24-21 win over the Toe Pirates, 3-2. Toe is tied for third with Isis and Alamum, who are both also 3-2. The Buddha City Elite, 3-3, remain in striking distance of first in the planet thanks to a 35-31 win over Ionath, 1-4. Elite quarterback Gary Lindros threw for 286 yards and 5 touchdowns on the day, including 3 touchdown strikes to tight end Rick Warburg. Lindros was outperformed by Ionath quarterback Quentin Barnes, who went 34 of 40 for 412 yards and 4 touchdowns. Ionath is only a half game above last place and could very well be headed for relegation. In the Solar Division, Neptune, 4-1, hung a 24-20 score on previously undefeated Bartel, also 4-1. The result moves both teams into a 3-way tie with Jupiter for first place in the division. The Jacks, 4-1, had a bye this week. Texas, 3-2, fell a game back in the division race thanks to a 14-10 loss to Sheb, who is 3-3.
Deaths!
No deaths reported this week.
Offensive player of the week!
Y'all receiver Concord, who caught 13 passes for 211 yards and 2 touchdowns in the Criminals' 31-24 win over the Orbiting Death.
Defensive player of the week!
Corona Delana defensive end Jesper Schultz, who had 3 sacks and 4 solo tackles in a loss against the Isis Ice Storm.
Dropping bombs. That's what we did in this episode. Dropping crazy family bombs for Quentin Barnes. How about them apples? Gets to meet the sister. His dad is still alive. It's a topsy-turvy world in the world of GFL. It's crazy, and it's going to get crazier. A short episode at 23 minutes, but I think it's a pretty punchy one. I think that was definitely worth your entertainment dollar. I told you I had 18 new junkie shoutouts, people who signed up with profiles over at scottsigler.com. If you have not signed up for one yet, I'm sorry about your leprosy on your fingers. It's got to be terrible that you can't grab the mouse or the clicky pad and the keyboards and go to the interwebs and go to scottsigler.com and create a freaking profile. It's not like I'm asking all that much to give you free fiction every damn Sunday and usually a lot of Fridays and also occasionally a Wednesday or two. You know, I'm feeling a little crazy. We did something fun. Like, I digress. Get your ass over to scottsigler.com. Sign up with a profile. You don't even need anybody's permission. You can just go ahead and do it. And then you can be like these amazingly wonderful, awesome people from Australia. Super Trucker. From Canada. Outlaw 8. From Denmark. Cannon Feuder. From the United Kingdom. Starameth. Little Lexi. FDO's Fluffer. Vertical Flyer. And my countrymen and countrywomen from the United States of America. Sage Raziel. B. Grant. K. Kufo, Super Dave 16, William Scat, Heather Harmony, Kimi Loves To, Marilyn Hansen, John and Daria, Uncle Johnny's Puppy Chow, and E.Z. Flow. Those are people who signed up with profiles over at scottsigler.com. The list, prepared by none other than my best buddy and business partner, A Real Girl, A. Kovacs, the director of Doom herself, and her favorite New Junkie shout out this week is Uncle Johnny's Puppy Chow. Now, if you listen to John Tweedy's halftime speech to motivate the Prawat and lead them on to victory, you will understand what that nickname is all about. I'm quite impressed with it myself. It's quite nice. So what is your prize, Uncle Johnny's Puppy Chow? Well, let me tell you. I'm going to go into the treasure closet. Let me check. Uncle Johnny's Puppy Chow, I want you to know that your safety is of the ultimate importance to me. Now, I'm not saying that you are or are not a heroin addict. I'm not passing judgment, not making accusations, not saying anything like that. I'm just saying that there are heroin addicts in the United States. You are from the United States. You are one of my countrymen and or countrywomen from the United States. Therefore, it is possible that you are an IV drug abuser. All I'm saying is this, your prize, your new junkie, favorite new junkie shout out name prize is an alcohol swab in its own little foil. It's antiseptic. 70% isopropyl alcohol contains one prep pad. Yes, this is for you. This is for you. Just in case you ever need to, shall we say, self-medicate with a hypodermic needle of some kind. I'm just, again, no judgments. We love you no matter what. So congratulations for your wonderful prize. All of you who have not signed up with profiles over at scottsigler.com, just go do it. Just go do it. And we will love you for that. That's it for this week. Notice there was no promo this week. So if you have a podcast or you're giving something away for free and you can make an audio promo that is 60 seconds or less, you can email the MP3 of that to media@scottsigler.com and we will get it in the queue and try and get your promo played and get you a little bit of exposure. I thought this was a good episode. I thought a lot of cool stuff happened. Hope you guys enjoyed it. Happy 8th anniversary, junkies. Happy 8th anniversary to all y'all. And I will talk to you real soon. You have been listening to the MVP, Book 4 in the Galactic Football League series. Written and performed by Scott Sigler. Produced by A. Kovacs and engineered by Steve Rickyberg. For more information on the author and for more free stories, go to scottsigler.com. Theme music is the song Heaven's Alive by the band Lacuna Coil.